This is Thoughts on the Table by DisgracesOnTheMenu.com.
Welcome to Thoughts on the Table, the audio blog. Paolo here with an episode of the series Italians of the World. And today I have the pleasure to be here with Canola Award winner Simona Carini from the blog Briciole Crumbs. Hi Simona, how are you?
Hi Paolo.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, my pleasure. So Simona, let's start talking about you. Where about you live?
I now live in Northern California. Originally, I am from Perugia. That's where I was born and where I grew up. That's in central Italy. However, after finishing my studies, I moved to Milan. So before moving to California, I lived in Milan for 10 years. I've been in Northern California for a long time. Let's put it that way.
I've been to Perugia once and I loved it. It's a wonderful city. I really recommend anybody visiting Italy should go to Perugia. It's a fantastic city and really easy to get around as a tourist. Super organized. Fantastic. So it's wonderful. Simona, you're a writer, you're a food writer, you develop recipes, you're a photographer, you've done so many things. When did you start blogging? And what was the inspiration for the name of your blog, Briciole?
Okay, so I have a degree in English. Mm-hmm. So before moving to California, I took this degree in foreign languages for me, so in English. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do with my blog was really focus on pronunciation because I was surrounded by people that love Italian food, mm-hmm. but did not quite know how to pronounce the words. And so one evening I heard the word bruschetta.
Classic.
You know, I'm from Umbria. I mean, bruschetta is like, you know, fundamental food. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, it's like, I got to do it. So if one goes back to my very early posts from 7 years ago, you can see that they're basically just a few words explaining what words mean. Fantastic. And then the audio recording, which you know, now we sort of take it for granted as exemplified by the fact we're on a podcast. Mm-hmm. But 7 years ago, it was not so common. So that's how I started. And then I started adding a few things, sort of like, you know, the different types of coffee that we have in Italy and this kind of things. And then I joined the food blogging sort of greater community, which 7 years ago was substantially smaller.
Right.
And I realized that what a lot of people were doing was talking about their recipes. And so I started also writing a few recipes.
Right.
And then slowly I started having Italian people reading my blog. So I started translating some of the sentences. And so the blog, to make it a bit short, the blog has evolved with my widening interests, not only recipes, but, you know, bread making and cheese making and pasta making. But I have to say that it has remained true to its original inspiration. Because for every post I write, I still record a snippet with Italian words so people know how to pronounce prezzemolo and
that's really cool.
spaghetti and, you know, ricotta and, you know, all that.
Amazing.
Briciole is a reference to the fairy tale and about dropping breadcrumbs as a trail. And because breadcrumbs are, you know, part of eating, you know, in Italy, at the end of the meal, there are breadcrumbs on the table because we eat bread. And so that's sort of a little bit what it refers. Hindsight, this is a funny thing. That it's not very easy for people to spell it correctly, I then realized. And so sometimes it comes out as bricole, which is actually a nautical term.
I didn't know.
Yes.
Well, my blog name, you know, is a misspelled Italian word, so I'm familiar with what happens.
What happens, yeah.
But it's cool that you've chose, you know, I think the name is very, very meaningful and, you know, is a path through, you know, through food. And coincidentally, it led you to bread making. So yes. That kind of a full circle there. So yeah. Really interesting. Yeah. Actually, yeah. I'm very interested about bread making. I have not ventured myself into bread mm-hmm. making yet. Mm-hmm. I took one class because yes. I was interested, but then it never really materialized. I haven't really started. So can you share more about your passion for making bread?
It kind of snuck up on me, I have to say it, mm-hmm. Because what happened is, well, there is a side of me that is very scientific. I have a degree in English and German literature, but I also have a degree in computer science.
Oh, really?
So there's a part of me that it's very sort of, I need to understand how this thing works. Mm-hmm. And I also started with a class that was offered, you know, locally. Mm-hmm. And I was very intrigued in the class because what happened in that class is the teacher who's ended up becoming my friend mm-hmm. and opening a bakery locally, she demystified sourdough for mm-hmm. me. Sometimes there is this idea that there is a sort of an aura of mystery around things, even with Italian food like risotto. Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, you make risotto.
It's so hard, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very scientific, it's not, really, once
you know mm-hmm. a few things. So she demystified sourdough for me, and I got very much into it. Mm-hmm. What I like as a computer scientist, it's really like writing a program because you follow the steps,
yes,
and then you run it, and then you get something out of it.
Then it crashes.
So there's actually no magic mm-hmm. in it. And I very much enjoy the process of seeing what ends up being, you know, a type of fermentation, of mm-hmm. seeing ingredient evolve and turn into something else. So I don't think making bread is a matter of easy or difficult. It's mm-hmm. a matter of investing some time, yeah. That's for sure. Except that you'll make some mistakes. Mm-hmm. And take classes or read books. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm totally not, for me, it's not a problem. I'm not the person that thinks like, oh, I have to figure these things by myself. You know, there are a lot of people who know yeah. a lot. And I am very lucky because in San Francisco, there is a place called the San Francisco Baking Institute.
Oh.
And they do professional classes, mm-hmm. but they also do weekend classes for non-professional. And so a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I mm-hmm. took a class there. And there it really laid down the basic for me, understanding, you know, the basic concept. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter really of setting aside the time and, you know, testing yourself and getting good books. There are really good books out there. There right. are mm-hmm. really great teachers. You know, Peter Reinhardt is probably the number one name that everybody knows. But there are many good books. And mm-hmm. so once you feel comfortable, you then, you know, give yourself the time to try. And then it becomes a game, really. I want to try this and I want to try that mm-hmm. and what that. So very recently, I actually took a week-long course at the San Francisco Baking Institute.
Fantastic.
That was really great. Mm-hmm.
What about the equipment? Do you need anything special? Just your normal oven that works?
Yes. So for bread, really, I mix by hand. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is a post that is going up on my blog. Mm-hmm. Probably today. Yes, I learned to sort of rig my oven so that I get an ideal condition to bake bread. Mm-hmm. But first of all, there are so many types of bread that not all of them need high temperature and steaming inside. Mm-hmm. But one thing that home bread bakers can use is cast iron Dutch ovens. And those are actually really very handy. And you can bake your bowl of, you know, sourdough bread at home and it comes out beautiful.
I see.
No, it takes a few hours and it takes a little bit of planning. But mm-hmm. a lot of it is waiting, really. Because, you know, the kneading part, mm-hmm. nobody does that anymore, really. You just need, you know, to do folds, what they're called, stretch and folds. Mm-hmm. And then wait for water and flour together to make the magic happen. Mm-hmm. And yeast, of course.
Yeast. Of course. Oh, really cool. Yeah, I love bread. I say to myself that I'm a breadarian, really. I could live off bread. So yes, I should probably learn from you.
Yes, start making bread. Small. I mean, you know, that's always what I, even when I teach pasta, which we're going to probably talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Just start small. Don't start with the complicated things. You know, there, you know, start with a, something simple and you become comfortable, and then you add to your skills as you go along. I think it's not good when one starts with, you know, the complicated things that they don't quite understand. And then, of course, you know, things don't turn out well, and you stir ingredients, and that's a first, a negative first impression that's difficult to overcome.
Yeah, like for every learning, you know, you do, it's always good to take it in steps, and baby steps.
Yeah.
You know, and don't be discouraged if the first attempts don't work out. Unfortunately for me, often the first attempt really works. It's really strange how it goes. And the second one is a disaster. So
yeah, no, that happens. It's what my father used to say, that you fall from your bike when you think you've learned.
That's right.
It's when you think you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, so for sure, I will get on your blog and get some resources, some books, and start learning. You mentioned pasta. Of course, I'm very interested into that too, and also seeing your YouTube channel where you show the technique, because pasta making, aside from the dough itself, is often about the technique that you use to produce the shape, which is fundamental. You know, the shape will dictate how the pasta will cook, how the pasta will take the sauce, how the bite will feel, all the texture elements. So what can you share about pasta making? When did you start?
This is very interesting. My mother made egg pasta every Sunday.
Oh, I see.
So I would wake up on Sunday morning to the sound of my mother rolling 4 eggs of pasta on her huge kneading board. My mother was a great cook, but not exactly a great teacher, in the sense that it's like, probably because she learned by watching, because she expected the same from me. And it was not very easy to share the kitchen with her. So I basically remember a lot visually, but I never really sat down with her and with her watching me doing things.
Right.
So I learned by myself in my kitchen when, you know, and I also watched some videos before doing it, because really pasta, sometimes it's so hard to explain in words what you're doing. And short videos, I mean, my videos are not longer than a minute, gives you a better sense. So I started because 2 years ago at this point, I was participating in this blog event with a group of Italian bloggers. We toured Italy region by region, and for every region we cooked traditional dishes. And it was amazing, because even though I'm Italian, that doesn't mean I know the cuisine of all the regions of Italy, which is very different.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I try to explain, you know.
Right.
Sicily cuisine is so different from, you know, Trentino, but even from Umbria, I mean, it's very different. So I hosted the region of Basilicata, and I prepared this dish, and I chose to prepare stracinati, which is a traditional pasta shape. And that was just the beginning. I got totally intrigued by the fact that you take some flour, you take some water, you make a dough, and then the sky's the limit. I mean, the tradition of myriad shapes of pasta that just starts with this very simple dough. Now, I have to say that, you know, in Italy, there are two major basic kind of pasta dough. One is the egg dough, which is, you know, as eggs, and that's what we use to make tagliatelle, fettuccine, tortellini, ravioli.
Right.
But in southern Italy, a lot of the tradition uses semolina flour, so ground durum wheat and water, which is the same dough of the dry pasta that one buys in the boxes.
Right.
So that was actually, I was not familiar at all with that, because my mother, as I said, made egg pasta. And so I learned, slowly I got intrigued, and from stracinati I learned to make orecchiette and, you know, Sardinian gnocchi. And every time I decided to do a shape, I read something about it. I tried to see some videos. And then I went on my own and I perfected. And here again, I encourage people not to start with a huge amount of dough, but you know, when you learn, you make a little bit, like 100 mm-hmm. grams of flour, so yeah. that you can make mistakes and you don't get nervous, because the dough dries out. So mm-hmm. once you start, you know, shaping it, you have to go a little bit. And so then I said, well, I learned from videos, maybe I can do a little video. So I enlisted my husband and, you know, very sort of simple. We're not video makers. So, you know, we use my iPhone, but I think it really helps. And so then I put them out on YouTube, and I know that people, they've told me that they find them very useful in helping them figuring how to use their hands.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, absolutely.
It's another thing that as we know, we're less of a manual-oriented society nowadays.
Less and less, yes.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. So, and I've also taught some classes, and I know people get a very it's just very immediate satisfaction from, you know, making pasta. And mm-hmm. certain shapes are very famous, like orecchiette. They are famous here as well. You know, others are less famous. Mm-hmm. And I'm also following a little bit my dream of creating my own shape of pasta, sort of. So, yeah. Not that it will go down in history as mine, but yeah.
So you've been inventing your shape, trying. Yeah. So you're still trying.
I think I have.
Oh, really?
And it's called. It's gonna be on the blog soon, and it's called the spirals.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I think I've seen something. Yeah, I've seen a tweet or something from you.
I put a picture out.
Oh, that's a teaser. I see.
That's also going to be shortly on my blog. I already have the video, so I have to write the post.
They look fabulous. Yeah, so really cool. Nice. Fantastic. Good stuff. I really encourage everybody to go and check out the YouTube channel. Making pasta is a wonderful activity to do. Gives you a lot of satisfaction. It's not that hard. There are shapes that are quite easy. And then the result is amazing. You will wow your guests, guaranteed. So that's something that, I definitely recommend. Though, like Simona said, just start small. Don't invite your guests just yet. Make your 100 grams of dough and make a meal for two. And then, you know, we'll take it from there. Mm-hmm. So, Simona, looking at your website, I've also noticed you've been making cheese as well. And again, I continue to be impressed, even more so, because it's one of those activities where you really need to know what you're doing. So how did you get to start making cheese, and what is the story there?
Well, it's a fun story, and I think part of it goes back a little bit to, you know, the bread and pasta. You know, being in Italy, you know, pasta, I mean, I had my mom's pasta and, you know, the bread, you know, there was the bakery. And I wasn't very much into cooking growing up to begin with. So when I started really getting into cooking after I moved to California, so the idea that I learned from my mother or from my grandmother just doesn't apply to me. Actually, my paternal grandmother was a bread baker. I know she was a great cook, but she passed away when I was an infant, so I didn't learn from her. So I am not the poster child of, you know, learning from your family, but the poster child of the fact that you can learn by yourself. Cheese was, starting making cheese was a sort of a two-pronged attack. One was that my favorite, let's say, dairy product in Italy is ricotta. Mm-hmm. I say dairy product because technically, ricotta is not a cheese because a cheese is made with milk.
That's
and ricotta
true.
Is made with whey. So ricotta is the name. Ricotta means cooked twice. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because first the milk is goes through the process for making cheese. Mm-hmm. And the byproduct of this is whey. Then the whey gets cooked again at high temperature. And the proteins and fat that have escaped in the whey, so the whey protein and fat, they coagulate, and that's ricotta. And I love this story because to me, this is a story of people extracting everything from their food.
Yes.
You know, being very attentive and not to throw away anything. And ricotta is very ancient. So the tradition in Italy, which I saw as a kid, we used to buy pecorino from shepherds, and they would make their pecorino, and then with the whey, they would boil the whey and or cook the whey at high temperature and then get ricotta. So I always loved ricotta. It's light and, you know, tasty and sweet. And so when I moved to California, I wanted to eat ricotta. And the first ricotta I bought in a store ended up in the trash can. It's just really,
it wasn't very good. Yeah.
It was horrible. So I resigned myself to eating ricotta only when I was in Italy, which is, you know, very funny. I would just eat a lot because it's also very perishable. So I couldn't really bring it to the United States. And so, but it was lingering in my mind that one day I would try to do this. And then, this is what, 5 years ago, I at the same time, I interviewed a chef in the Bay Area, and she told me that she was making her own mascarpone to make tiramisu. Mm-hmm. And that was a big surprise for me because, of course, in Italy, you just go to the store on the corner, you buy mascarpone. It's so easy.
It's delicious.
And it's good. It's fresh.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, we used to have, you know, mascarpone with sugar on top as dessert.
That's all. Yeah.
And although it's not easy, you can find imported mascarpone in the United States. So I was okay for my tiramisu. So, but when this chef described to me the process, I thought, well, that's very easy. I can try it. Mm-hmm. I went home and I did it.
You did it.
It was amazing. It was amazing because, of course, it was fresh. Mm-hmm. So you buy, you know, like very good organic cream. Mascarpone is made with cream. Mm-hmm. You get this amazing product. So this gave me confidence and also made me incredibly curious because in Italy, again, because cheese is ubiquitous and it's fresh and it's great, and you know, every supermarket has a big cheese department, there's not a very good incentive to learn how do people make mozzarella. You know, how is mozzarella different from, say, Parmigiano, which of course they're very different, you know, but you know, well, how? I mean, what makes them so different?
Right.
And, you know, just like bread is fundamentally water, flour, and yeast. So you have three ingredients, very simple, and you have this amazing variety. Cheese is the same. I mean, cheese is made with milk. And yeah, look at all the different cheeses in Italy, France, in Europe, you know. So I got intrigued. And I did my first test, which I still remember. It was a fresh cheese. I bought some milk, and I fermented it with cultured buttermilk. And I got a spreadable cheese. It was so satisfying because I was ready to just throw away the whole thing. And the most satisfying part was see the milk that from liquid it sets it. Coagulates.
That's right.
Magic. I'm still kind of very impressed when it happens. So I started like that, and then I tried making my first hard cheese, and the result was actually very good. So I got intrigued, and I started making different kinds of cheeses. In the United States, actually, home cheese making is widespread. You can buy supplies. And then little by little, I got even into more complicated things. And then for 2 years, I flew to Massachusetts and I took a weekend class with a person there. His name is Jim Wallace, and he teaches cheese making. And so, you know, very similar to bread making, I, you know, embrace more complicated, you know, projects. I know when something is not something I can handle, and it's very satisfying. There's a bit more equipment for bread. I just mix by hand, really. And don't have much equipment. For cheese, you have to have a few more things, but not very complicated. The most complicated thing I have is my cheese press, and that's it.
I see. I had a question. Don't you need raw and pasteurized milk to make a lot of the cheeses that we have in Italy?
Yes. So, you know, I don't claim that, you know, I make the same cheese, of course. This is, you know, homemade cheese is a bit of a different thing. So raw milk is ideal, making cheese. And that's how a lot of cheeses, you know, in Italy, starting from Parmigiano, is made with raw milk. I don't have a cow. And also raw milk in Italy, even for, you know, a person at home, many cities, there are dispensers of raw milk and you can buy it.
You can buy it.
In the United States, the situation is much more complicated. Every state is different.
Mm-hmm.
And within California, every county is different.
I see.
So in the county, depending on where you are, you know, you may or may not be able to buy raw milk at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the whole story of, you know, raw milk. But mm-hmm. really, you can make cheese with pasteurized milk.
I see.
The one milk you cannot use to make cheese is ultra pasteurized.
Mm-hmm.
And also, unfortunately, some milk is sold as pasteurized, but in reality, they use a very high temperature. At high temperature, yeah. The proteins get denatured, and you don't get a good curd and, you know, things like that. So,
I see. So there's more that takes place.
In an mm-hmm. ideal situation in terms of milk, mm-hmm. let's say, you know, because it's not so easy. I don't have a cow, and it's not so easy to get raw milk, but I'm pretty happy.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Again, out of necessity, one starts and then, you know, it evolves. And when you have a passion for it and you, you're willing to put in time and research,
yeah.
You know, this is really a good message that everybody can really start this and be very happy with it.
Yeah. And I should say that now, of course, I'm very happy because every time I make cheese, not every cheese works, but most of the cheeses that I make, I can use the whey and I make ricotta.
It's byproduct.
So I have my own ricotta.
Simona, we're almost out of time for this episode. It's been great talking with you. We should definitely do it again. Mm-hmm. I will post, of course, the link to your blog and your various Twitter handles and whatnot. And looking forward to seeing what you're going to post next. And again, maybe later on, we'll have another episode where we'll get into more detail about any of these topics that we touched today, which are fascinating. It's really fantastic.
Thanks to you, Paolo. Thanks for having me. It was a fun and pleasure.
Awesome. I'm glad you liked it. Bye-bye.
Bye.